You're listening to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network, available to everyone from www.tackletaxhavens.com. I'm Naomi Fowler, and at the end of each month, I'll be bringing you news and analysis of a subject our politicians don't want to talk about: the secrets of the shadow banking system, tax havens, and financial abuses that have brought the world economy to its knees. I'll show you what's really going on, how we're paying for it, and what we can do about it. But first, the TaxCast news headlines for this month. Egypt's parliament opened this month with new representatives and a new government elected in the freest elections since 1952. But the Egyptian military still holds the power in the country. They're supposed to hand it over to the civilian government by the 30th of June. The Muslim Brotherhood's Freedom and Justice Party says it wants to fulfil the demands of the revolution for greater social justice, advance the Egyptian economy, and combat corruption. But managing finances in the public interest isn't just an Egyptian concern. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network.
Mubarak and his cronies have been shifting capital offshore. We know it runs to hundreds of billions. Egypt will have to push for international cooperation from governments like Switzerland, United Kingdom, and the various places where the money is now held. The sums involved are so huge, they can't afford not to do this process of investigating and repatriating the money.
According to Global Financial Integrity's report out this month, developing countries lost over $900 billion in illicit outflows in 2009. The majority of this money is put through tax havens or secrecy jurisdictions. US presidential hopeful and billionaire Mitt Romney released his tax returns under pressure this month. They show he paid 15% on his $45 million declared income. That's less than his secretary pays, or any average working US citizen. Bain Capital, the private equity partnership he ran where he built up much of his wealth, has 138 secretive offshore funds in the Cayman Islands. That's a notorious tax haven, where you can go to prison not just for revealing information, but even for asking for it. Tax fairness campaigner Chuck Collins.
For the last three decades, we've been reducing taxes on millionaires steadily. Wages for most people have been flat or stagnant or fallen. What's the national conversation? It's about austerity. We're talking about laying off teachers, firefighters. What kind of society are we becoming?
Former British Prime Minister Tony Blair was also exposed this month for appearing to pay only 3% tax on a declared £12 million income, just under $19 million. Neither Blair or Romney has broken any laws in their use of complicated webs of companies, partnerships, and secrecy jurisdictions. But tax justice campaigners say it demonstrates the need for reform, so there's no longer one set of rules for the big players and another for the rest of us. The Indian government has lost a landmark tax case against the communications company Vodafone. The Indian tax authorities wanted Vodafone to pay capital gains tax for a huge corporate takeover in 2007. But the court ruled the Indian government has no jurisdiction over Vodafone's $11 billion purchase of mobile assets in India because the transaction took place offshore. Vodafone's also controversial in the UK. Last year, campaigners accused British tax officials of letting Vodafone off billions after settling a long-running tax dispute. Tax Justice Group UK Uncut targeted Vodafone in demonstrations across Britain. Here's one protester.
They're just trying to make a stand and show that there is an alternative to all these massive cuts on the go at the moment. A simple one is just getting everyone in the society to pay their fair share, and that means the corporations stop dodging tax and pay what they owe.
India plans to implement a new tax code next year. More on that later. The US Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations is holding an inquiry into HSBC banking activities. The nature of the area of inquiry isn't yet known, but banking regulators have raised concerns over the bank's weak anti-money laundering controls on previous occasions. Since 2008, a number of European and US banks have signed deferred prosecution agreements and paid out over $1.2 billion in fines. And that's the headlines for this month. Now we're going to speak to campaigning accountant and economist Richard Murphy for his take on this month's tax justice news. Let's establish some basics first, Richard. We may not agree with all the ways our governments spend the tax we pay, but we get a lot of services for our money. So we get education, refuse collection, the emergency services. And in the UK, we've got our National Health Service. So we get medical care from cradle to grave, free at the point of delivery. But not everyone's paying their fair share. And we have a tax gap. So can you explain what that is, Richard?
The tax gap is the difference between the tax that should be paid if all the rules that have been put in place were properly applied and the amount of money that the government actually gets. So if you add the numbers together using the UK as an example, we've got 70 billion of evasion, the illegal bit, 25 billion of avoidance, the clever bit, usually done by accountants and lawyers on behalf of wealthy clients or large companies, and 25 billion of cash, which is being paid late. Altogether, 120 billion pounds.
That's a lot of tax.
That's enough tax to pay for the entire UK National Health Service. It's enough to pay for the UK defence and education budgets and have some money left over. It's in total, at the moment, almost a quarter of the tax that is received. This is a very big sum of money.
Let's talk about tax havens where trillions are kept offshore. When we use the word offshore, it makes you think of little islands in the Caribbean with palm trees and sandy beaches. And there are lots of tax havens in the Caribbean, but the UK and the US are also two of the world's largest hubs for secretive financial activities, aren't they?
Offshore actually has nothing at all to do with geography. That's really misleading. Liechtenstein is certainly not Palm Beach nor an island, but it's offshore. What offshore means actually is that transactions are recorded in a place between people who are elsewhere, i.e. not in that place. So if, let's say, Liechtenstein lets people from Germany deal with people in France by recording their transaction in Liechtenstein, so the tax authorities in Germany and France don't know about the deal, then Liechtenstein is offshore to Germany and France and is therefore an offshore jurisdiction. I prefer to call them secrecy jurisdictions because, well, that's what they supply. Secrecy is literally what they're about. The UK basically invented offshore tax avoidance. It set up some of the very earliest tax havens outside its own apparent territory. The US has internal tax havens, Delaware and Wyoming and Nevada, for example, places where it's very easy to set up companies and trusts which can't be cracked by the tax authorities, let alone by the tax authorities in other countries. Delaware may be the biggest tax haven in the world in reality. The UK has Jersey, Guernsey, the Isle of Man, Gibraltar, the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands. All these are our responsibility. Massive amounts of money flowing through them. So we have, as major developed countries, to make sure that the supply of what I call corruption services are stopped from taking place. The US and the UK could do more to stop this than anyone else.
Okay, each month we're going to talk about some of the events that have happened. There's been a very interesting ruling in India regarding Vodafone.
This is a case which India should have won. $2.9 billion was money that India could not afford to lose. This is going back to this question of economic substance. Where did something take place? The company that bought was a Vodafone subsidiary in the Netherlands, and the company that sold was a Hutchison subsidiary in the Cayman Islands. And they thought that this meant that the transaction was outside the scope of Indian tax, and the withholding tax was not applied. Now, that brings up an enormous issue, which is high on the agenda of many countries at the moment, and that is how to tackle this sort of artificial tax avoidance. What we do really need is a general anti-avoidance principle. And actually, it is possible to create such a thing. It would basically say, don't try and fiddle your way through tax avoidance to making an artificial profit at cost to the rest of us.
Let's talk about Mitt Romney versus Bill Gates' position on tax.
Mitt Romney's clearly put the issue of using a tax haven, he's admitted he's used the Cayman Islands, onto the agenda for debate in the USA. The debate's been fuelled by Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, being in London and talking very recently and saying,
I think I should pay more tax. And so a number of other very wealthy people. For large companies, one of the solutions is actually publishing accounts on a country-by-country basis, so we know what tax or how little tax they pay in each country that they operate in. We need to have laws which tackle their tax avoidance, a general anti-avoidance principle in law, to stop their use of clever accountants and smart lawyers. Whilst the use of a tax haven may well be legal, exactly the same mechanism can be used by the kleptocrats to hide the money they've looted from developing countries. Tax havens are still used to hide the proceeds of crime, whether that be drug trafficking, human trafficking, counterfeiting, piracy, or whatever else, that undermine democracy, undermine the rule of law, facilitate crime, and so harm good, honest business. And in every case, that's harmful.
Thanks, Richard. Richard Murphy of Tax Research UK and writer of the book The Courageous State. He'll be back with his take on tax justice news next month. And now for this month's feature. In recent years, even politicians and bankers admit we've seen systemic failure in our financial systems. But that opens the way for systemic change. The Occupy movement set up camps on the doorstep of the City of London's financial sector 3 months ago.
We're sitting on a cold January afternoon and we've got an overview of the tent city that we have outside St Paul's Cathedral in London. I'm with Peter Dombey, who is a member of the Occupy Economics Working Group.
There's around about probably 50, 60 tents, so there's probably about 100 to 150 people staying here.
And we've got a tent city university. I've just been in the library tent, the information tent. There's books, there's workshop areas that can be booked out. So everything is very well organised.
It's not just a residential area where protesters are sleeping. It's also an outreach area where we can talk to members of the public, engage with members of the public and let them know just what Occupy is all about. You can get as many people out on the streets as you want to, and they march along, and at the end of the day they go home, and they go, right, you've protested, now we'll carry on as before. Which is why we are here, hopefully permanently, applying pressure on those authorities. The people in charge are saying, OK, let's try and fix the current system and get it to how it was before. What we're saying is, no, we need a new system.
Finding Occupy and getting a bit involved, it's given the most hope I think we've probably had since the 60s.
We're in Occupy London's community space, the Bank of Ideas, where people are debating economic solutions. It's a huge office block that Occupy reclaimed from the banking giant UBS. Now, the only transactions going on here are the non-monetary exchange of ideas. Chris is showing me round.
In here we've got community and family space.
Computers that anyone can come and use, the internet. Free University started up here recently. University courses that are running, ranging from economic literacy to international relations. There's a huge range of incredible activities.
Vanessa Baird of the New Internationalist magazine.
This Occupy movement is offering a lot to the political health of the world. I think it has got real potential for changing things and has already. I mean, I think you can see that just the way in which the more mainstream politicians may refer to Occupy in a slightly disparaging way, but they refer to it and they're rattled by it. They're really rattled by it.
The prevailing economic model collapsed comprehensively in 2007, 2008. There's no question about it.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network.
And for the first 2 years, everyone expected that governments would intervene and do something to re-regulate, re-tax and reshape the global markets, but it didn't happen. So the Occupy movement, I think, has actually taken over what was a vacuum and created a space where there is a genuine debate about very, very far-reaching economic, social and political issues happening in a way which is democratic, quite consensual, open to a very, very broad range of opinions. But without them, that wouldn't have happened. So I think that's been a great success.
Chris again, from the Bank of Ideas.
Unquestionably, there are discussions being had now that would not have happened if people had just held some rallies. The fact that people are sleeping in tents outside St Paul's in the middle of a bitter cold winter, I mean, it's an unequivocal mark in the ground about how angry people are. We can choose the world that we want to live in. It doesn't have to be this one.
Occupy sees the politicians trying to save the current failed system as naive. They say as fast as the authorities evict them, they'll set up new camps elsewhere. And governments can't evict ideas about a new age of financial transparency and accountability. You've been listening to the Taxcast. We'll bring you more news and analysis next month.